Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, folks, our women's final is set. It will be 21-year-old world number one on a 34-match winning streak, Iga Świątek, taking on the 18-year-old Coco Gauff. It'll be the 2018 French Open and Wimbledon junior champions facing off for the senior French Open title. There is so much to talk about today. Obviously, the two semi-finals played by these two young women today, as well as some follow-up on yesterday's big story involving Amélie Mauresmo. And because there's so much to talk about, we've only got the one and only Pam Shriver to join us. Hello, Pam.
Hello. And in your 10th year anniversary week, thanks for having me on my last night in Paris.
Oh,
that's nice.
That's lovely.
Pam, you spent a lot of time with the Eiffel Tower this fortnight.
Including using it as headwear.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Hotel was close to it. It made me seem like I was really worldly and doing a lot of sightseeing. So why not?
It's classic Insta content, isn't it? Here I am in Paris. To prove it, here's the Eiffel Tower.
On my head.
Absolutely.
On my head. It's been overall quite an uplifting day today, I think. We are just minutes post the Coco Gauff press conference, which was just the most uplifting experience. In fact, I think we should talk about Coco Gauff first. She won her semi-final today. They were both, quite frankly, they were compelling in their own ways, but quite one-sided semi-final wins for both Iga Świątek and Coco Gauff. Coco Gauff was nervy to start with, but shook it off so quickly today against Martina Trevisan, and just show, I can't believe I'm saying this about an 18-year-old, but showed all of her experience.
Well, that's the first press conference of hers I've ever been in. I've never been in the same room as her before, so it was very interesting just to see how she interacted with people. Obviously, most of us twice, three times her age, it must be pretty daunting. Or at least I assume it would be daunting for somebody of that age. She does not make it look daunting in the slightest. And that was the first thing that came through. She was entirely comfortable in that room. She was entirely comfortable out there on the court. And something she said in the press conference about how 2 years ago she thought she was ready to win a Grand Slam. And you could sense how she'd been putting this pressure on her shoulders. And suddenly there's a different attitude and it's all clicking. And you know, you talk about an 18-year-old. Chris Clary said to her from the New York Times, he said, do you feel like a veteran pro? And I mean, she laughed at the idea of it. But it does feel like she's been around for a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, she's the youngest Grand Slam finalist since Maria Sharapova at Wimbledon in 2004. And yet, actually, her age is something we're talking about very little. Compared to, say, the Emma Raducanu Leila Fernandez US Open final last year, it was, wow, these teenagers coming through, two teenagers facing one another. And I remember a line from you, Matt, after Raducanu winning, saying, actually, her age is the least extraordinary thing about this victory. And with Coco Gauff, whether it's because she's been around so long, whether it's because of what happened with Raducanu and Fernandez, it all feels more normalised. I don't know, but nobody's really talking about the fact that she's 18, or maybe it's because she just doesn't seem like an 18-year-old.
Yeah, I think there's lots of factors. Firstly, I'd love to be cool enough to wear her bucket hat that she wore to press. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
I'm sorry to include you in this, Pam, but can you imagine what any of us would look like wearing a Coco Gauff bucket hat?
But it looked cool.
Yeah, didn't it? She pulled it off. I think what's interesting about Coco Gauff to me is that she's almost gone through this cycle of when she came through as a 15-year-old, I don't want to say she was overhyped, because what she was doing was extraordinary. But, you know, we recorded a podcast at Wimbledon, and there were people standing on the picnic tables just to get a glimpse of her on the big screen. You know, it was Coco mania.
They were trying to find a name for Henman Hill that began with C, but there is no word for a hill that begins with C, so...
So it was absolutely phenomenal, and she got all this attention. But since then, she's actually not done anything in a big rush or a big hurry. There's been sort of really methodical, steady progress year on year. First title, first quarterfinal of a slam, top 20 ranking. She's just made this progress. And I think what that has done has perhaps made what she's doing now, which, as you said, she is still only 18. It is extraordinary. Seem just right. And like she's ready. And she seems ready for it, as she said in that press conference. So I think, you know, she's gone on this real journey from sort of overhyped, I don't want to say, but I almost feel like now underhyped, because it's extraordinary what she's doing.
And can I just say, having been to the finals of a major and the second major I ever played when it was too soon, and having seen what Emma Raducanu's been through, there's a lot to say the way the slow, steady, step-by-step progression, not that Coco wouldn't have wanted to get to a major final before Roland Garros 2022, after her Wimbledon performance 3 years ago, beating Venus, coming through qualifying, taking the whole tournament basically in the palm of her hand for the first 8 days. But this is really, truly the best way to get started in your career, which in tennis now is not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Yeah, there was an incredible line from her, wasn't she? When she was asked by Courtney Nguyen about the difference between Coco now and the Coco then, and she said, there's a difference between being ready and wanting it too much. She said, I want it, but I don't want it too much anymore. I want it an appropriate amount, which is amazing. Pam, has there been any point in the last 3 years since that breakthrough in 2019 when... during which time, obviously, there's been a bit of a pandemic going on. But, you know, I have heard the odd mutter about what's happened to Coco Gauff. You know, why isn't she winning every slam she enters? And it feels so silly now. But I've heard it, and I've heard it from, you know, pretty esteemed, knowledgeable people. Have you ever doubted that she would deliver on what was forecast for her back in 2019?
Actually, there were a few matches that I called with her, either in the booth or courtside, where I saw some significant flaws with her forehand and her serve that made me question, like, whether or not... Because I kind of felt like maybe the pause of the pandemic during the 5-6 months with the tour was off. Like, she was at a perfect age to really reset and develop some of the flaws in her shots better. But... actually, when I think about the team that's around her, and I got to say, having been through what I've been through in my career and having seen a lot of other careers, I feel like her parents are juggling a lot of difficult acts really well, and they brought in a really good coach. And I feel like she's made some changes now in her forehand, and it's more steady. But yes, I have doubted at times. Which was probably silly of me to doubt, because honestly, she is a talent that only comes around once every 10 or 20 years.
Wow. That says a lot, because I think people looked at her and saw the physical attributes and the serve, the power, the easy power, a sort of natural competitor and a natural match player, and they assumed all of those things. And then when you broke it down and people started talking about that forehand, how easy is it to fix a forehand if it's a little bit dodgy? You know, this is the top level of the game. That's not easy to do. But for you to put her in that sort of company, I mean, that says a lot, really, about this run and also potential for the future.
Well, you got to look at her junior career and what she showed early. And, you know, the fact that She's had not the sudden rise. It was a little bit because of the age eligibility rule. You couldn't play as much as, say, we did back in the day. So she's been sort of had a governor on her. Like, she just couldn't play as much as she wanted. And that question was brought up today in the press conference. And I think in the long run, it's a really good thing for her. But I feel like now she's starting to put it all together. That doesn't mean she's going to win against Swiatek, the best player I've seen at the number one position in a long... I think even better than Ash Barty, to be honest.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially on clay, her best surface. But the improvements I've seen, the maturity, it happens when you're a teen at different times, and it's been really impressive to see her mature here.
There was a real, just incredible moment of maturity, wasn't there, when she took the pen in her hand in the moment of victory and went to sign the camera, as she does, and she wrote on it, hashtag end gun violence, which... to us, Pam, isn't a particularly controversial sentence, or not remotely controversial in these parts, but in the States, that is a controversial thing to say. She is, I mean, we know she's someone that is prepared to make a stand and use her platform, but that really is putting herself out there, isn't it?
Well, listen, for those of us from the States, to be honest, who covering this French Open, it won't be remembered in the long run from what happened here on the court. It'll be remembered what happened in Texas, which happened like third day of Roland Garros, where 21 people were murdered. And we've seen enough of it in our country. And I think athletes actually have such a great voice. Naomi Osaka showed it during the U.S. Open, and the Cincinnati played in New York right before the U.S. Open of 2020. The voice of the athlete and the voice of the tennis player athlete. So for Coco to recognize that, and she spoke out in a really powerful way when after the George Floyd murder. So I just give Coco Gauff at age 18, which is the age of my oldest child, who could no longer speak about these kind of mature things in a public way. But they've been preparing her for this, the dual role of being a leader as an athlete on the court, but also with a microphone off the court.
And it's not just gestures, is it? Because she was then asked about it in press at length. I asked her a couple of questions about it, and she had the goods to back it up. You know, she said, I've made a point. She said, I'm 18 now, I can vote.
Yeah,
I've made a point of educating myself. You know, this sense of responsibility is extraordinary. And she really, you know, that education that she's taken it upon herself to get came across. And we've got two young women in this final, 18 years old and 21. Just, Iga, you are 21 years old. Try and remember. who play tennis like it means everything to them. Like there's nothing else in the world that matters. And then when the last ball is struck, they have the perspective to know that it doesn't.
Yeah, it feels very healthy, doesn't it?
That combination is incredible to me.
And actually, Coco Gauff made the point that hasn't always been the case. You know, she, I really, really struck a chord with me that she was probably losing matches because she was too amped up, it mattered too much. And I always remember Andy Roddick saying, you can grip the racket too tightly if you're in those tight moments. And the one question I didn't get to ask her is, what went through your mind at match point? You know, were you able to separate yourself then? But the sense is that she could handle it because she was thinking, well, it's not the end of the world if I don't win. And therefore, she was free.
And over the last few years, I think Gauff has looked the most comfortable on court in doubles. And of course, this isn't her first Grand Slam final. She has been to a doubles final. And I think now she looks just as comfortable on the singles court as well. I think there's been a progression there as well.
She may yet reach another doubles final, Matt. It's on.
It is so on.
Does that make you feel good, Pam, to see Coco Gauff playing doubles at the same time as she's marauding away through the singles draw? That must be a nice feeling.
Absolutely. I think in the women's draw this year, actually, there's been a lot of singles players that have doubled up and done well in week one, week two. I think that's the beauty of the two out of three set format, is that you can play both. And if I could just quickly flash back to U.S. Open when I was 16, got the finals of the singles, actually had a match point in the doubles to get through to the doubles final as well.
But choked
because I was already in the singles final, and like the thought of being in two finals, so lost in the semis, but it's still possible. And so I love Pegula and golf in it, and I like that they play the All-American duo. I mean, Taylor Townsend's a great story, coming back from maternity leave. But anyway, it's been a really good tournament for the U.S.
Our friend of the pod, Andrew, has set his alarm for 4:58 a.m. in the States to watch that All-American doubles clash.
Yeah. That was heartwarming, wasn't it?
Yeah.
His appealing tennis alarm.
Love it.
What else did she have to say in her press conference, Coco Gauff? I felt like every line was completely quotable, wasn't it?
Well,
I mean, she was talking about how she was asked about whether anyone's had a better high school graduation week than her. And maybe they have, but it would have to be pretty darn good to have competed.
By the fact that she said she didn't have that writing on the camera lens premeditated. Mm. You asked her about that. Did you come onto court with a plan? No. That's what came into my mind at the end. And what I loved is she said, I left the court and my dad said to me, I'm proud of you. But I'm proud of you because of what you wrote on the camera, as more than what you did on the court as a tennis player. And I thought, isn't that great? You know, and she said that they encourage her to speak up and use the platform. And I think she said it years ago that her dad had said to her, you know, you can change the world as a tennis player.
Yeah, that was one of the things I asked her. I said, are you ever under pressure from I didn't specify who, but, you know, sponsors or agents or the forces that we all know exist in tennis and in sport and in the world, to not speak out, to play it safe, to not, you know, as the saying goes, mix sport with politics. And she kind of, I think there was a recognition in her answer that is a thing that happens, but she kind of said, look, people around me know that that's not going to fly with me. That's not me. This is how I do things. And, you know, she says she's actively encouraged to use her platform by the people around her, and that just, it sounds so healthy. And Pam, you know, you've shone a light on how crucial the people you have around you are, and it seems obvious maybe, but there's a lot of not so healthy people around this sport, aren't there? And maybe not necessarily the people themselves, but just relationship dynamics going on, whether it's, you know, specifically abusive or not. You know, there's just toxic stuff happening all over the place, and it just seems so healthy. Team Coco seems to be surrounded by a lovely, healthy halo.
Yeah, I think they do. And, you know, tennis players now, back in the day, we didn't say a team because we didn't necessarily have a team or see it as a team. But you see it now all the time, and I feel like Coco does have a great team. And what I love is that she's 18 and her parents, both parents, because it's really better, I think, if the mom and the dad are both around. Because too many times I feel like a female tennis player maybe only has the dad around. I actually think it's great she has both parents around. Now, she has younger siblings, so there's a bit to juggle here. But I also know there's three generations of this family. There's the grandparents, the parents, and then the Coco generation with her siblings. And it does take a team, not just here at Roland Garros, but there takes a team back home in Florida with the siblings as well.
God, imagine being Coco Gauff's younger sibling. I hope they have their own. I hope they're really brilliant at something that's nothing to do with tennis.
I get the sense that they're pretty good at stuff and that they give her plenty of stick in that kind of brotherly, sisterly kind of way.
I mentioned earlier on in the podcast that this final will be the 2018 French Open junior champion, which was Coco Gauff, against the 2018 Wimbledon champion, which was Iga Świątek.
Love that.
Coco told us in press today that Iga Świątek was a match point away from reaching that French Open junior final in 2018. She had a match point against Katie McNally, one half of Makoko. I love
so
it all.
Perfect.
I love it.
And then I think Iga Świątek tells the story that she was so mad that she didn't win that French Open juniors, that she lost the match point in the semi-finals, that she won Wimbledon just through pure anger. She just wanted to beat the field. She always brings that up when people mention that she's won Junior Wimbledon in reference to her grass court credentials, saying, well, you must be good on grass, you've won Junior Wimbledon. She says, yeah, I am, but mainly I won that tournament because I was angry and I was trying to prove a point.
I keep desperately grasping and hoping for the rivalries in women's tennis. That's the only thing we're missing from my
fist
perspective. And I'm confident they will come because we've got this crop. There's enough of them and they're all of a similar age and they're all so different and they've all got so much to give. It's going to happen. It's just not quite happening yet. So my latest hype train leaving the station for a rivalry. I mean, I'm all about the recency bias with these rivalries I'm bigging up. I'm now all about Coco Gauff against Iga Świątek.
A couple of weeks ago, Pam.
It was Andreescu Świątek. I had an Osaka Świątek moment. I really don't care where it's coming from. It just needs to happen. It's going to happen, right, Pam?
Well, it needs to happen. And I think this is as good a time as any. And to make a rivalry really click, you need dramatic moments deep in majors, at least a semi, but really a final. So here we have it, and we'll see how it goes. But even if it doesn't pan out as a great match, it sets the foundation for a future rivalry, which obviously women's tennis was just blown a difficult blow when Barty retired, 2 months into her dominance as a number one player with Świątek starting to win. We didn't know that Świątek winning in February before Barty's retirement. It was set up perfectly to have those two be like this rivalry going into 2022 and beyond. But I do think this one has some great possibilities.
It's going to happen, Pam. It's going to happen.
I hope so.
Why are you so hopeful, Pam? What is it about? I mean, I think we're all pretty much sold on Iga Świątek, who, what was it, 6-2, 6-1 against Daria Kasatkina
today?
If
you're not sold by now,
you're probably never going to be.
The first four games, I was just open-mouthed at what I was watching because all the variety and Kasatkina with all her spins and everything, and then suddenly Świątek just...
Best performance of
right.
the tournament so far.
You're having it now.
By a long way, I think.
There was no living with that, was there? And I mean, I don't think Kasatkina played badly, personally. But why does it give you hope? Because we know that Świątek's got the goods, but does Coco Gauff actually have the goods to live with that?
Well, I actually think when you think about Coco Gauff's junior career and what she did 3 years ago at Wimbledon and her slow and steady progression and the team that she has around her, I do think she has the goods to stick around at the top and to embrace these big moments. I mean, look how she handled her first major semifinal today against, it was Martina Trevisan, but let me tell you, that other lefty Martina is a hell of a player on a clay court, and there were some moments in that straight set match that tested Coco Gauff, and she stepped up, and I just think this is going to make her believe even more. So I definitely think this is the best chance of the best rivalry for the next year or two, but I think there will be others that will bloom before our eyes.
Oh, I'm here for multiple, Pam. There's room.
Everybody can bloom.
My cup can runneth over.
Just on Gauff being so comfortable in that semi-final, I feel like she's been really relaxed all tournament. And there was just a moment which I think highlighted it. After the first set, Trevisan was having her legs strapped, strapped. And then on the other chair, Gauff was just sat there eating a fruit salad. Just tucking in with a little...
Plastic fork.
and I felt like, okay, she's going to win.
Yeah, she filled me with that same confidence as well today. And yet she's in this situation where she's such a heavy favourite to win. I mean, that comes with its own banana skin, doesn't it? For Coco Gauff. And she said after the match that for some reason I just haven't been feeling nervous this tournament.
You were around Martina during all those years when she was dominant and on streaks like this. What was she like? Did she get the feeling that the target's on the back or get anxious about all of that? Or because to me, it always seemed like it made her play better.
Yeah, well, when you're in... Listen, I played through these amazing streaks of Chris Evert, Navratilova, Gauff, Selys, And then fortunately I retired. But today when I was watching Świątek, I actually flashed back to the dominance of, and even Serena. I didn't play during that time. I only commentated during Serena's great eras. But literally the quality of Świątek's game right now is equal to the greatest of all time during their streaks. And I thought the way she performed in a semifinal today against Kasatkina, who's a quality opponent, even though she'd never been to a semi before, I was really taken aback. So, yeah, she's the real deal.
It's not a coincidence, Pam, surely, that Iga Świątek has gone on this streak, has become this dominant, has filled this void at the top of the game at the exact time that Ash Barty retired. Can that be a coincidence?
Well, the only other time in history that I can compare it to was in 08, when a couple of weeks before French Open, Justine Henin announced in the number one position she was retiring. And I remember waking up in the States and seeing this news and being totally stunned, just like I was when I read that Ash Barty was retiring. So in 08, it actually sent the number one ranking on the women's side into total upheaval. Was all over the place between Ivanovic, Yankovic, and then finally Serena took it back either late in 08 or sometime in 09. This has been seamless. I mean, the number one ranking on the women's side hasn't lost since Barty lost to Shelby Rogers at last year's U.S. Open. I never would have imagined that Iga would have stepped up and embraced the number one position and done what she's done. But it's almost like she learned from Ash Barty.
Pretty cool. I mean, it's a real boon for tennis, isn't it? The fact that there is a natural heir to Ash Barty that can pick up that baton and on she goes. Because I agree with you. I mean, and I don't want to do down Anna Ivanovic and Yelena Yankovic, and I think there was Dinara Safina as well in that period of time. But you need somebody who is there all the time. And that's what makes the rivalry.
It was like a sort of audition period, that, that wasn't it, for filling the vacuum. And Świątek just sort of said, screw the auditions, I've got the role.
And I think she's completely cemented herself this tournament, because, you know, the majors are the most important tournaments, right? You know, and absolutely, if she had gone out here, it wouldn't have gone out early here, it wouldn't have undone what she did in, you know, Stuttgart and Rome and, you know, everywhere leading into the French Open. But there would have been, I think, a little question over whether, you know, she really was filling Ash Barty's role as the dominant number one if she'd gone out early at this French Open. And for her to play the French Open like this, which is the first time she's ever played a slam with that burden of expectation, with that idea that, okay, this is your chance, your time to go and win it. She's never had anything like that before because of the players who have been around, kind of ahead of her in the last couple of years. And yet, she's just, okay, but there've been little moments where we've thought maybe that she's been nervous, but she's dealt with it all so brilliantly, even in her press conferences as well as on the court. And yeah, she is the dominant number one, and here to stay, I think, for a long, long time.
6-2, 6-1 today, and Kasatkina showed up for that semi-final. I'm not sure Kasatkina will have any regrets that keep her up tonight.
Apart from the mismatch. There was the one mismatch at around 2-all, 2-3.
It's because Matt and I were there.
Yeah, we felt like
I felt through with that, because she'd set up the point and suddenly she's rushing in to go and polish it off, and I've been in that position and then I've top-edged it out the stadium.
But how often do you see that against the, you know, Coco Gauff was asked in her press conference, what do you need to do against Świątek? And she said, take my opportunities because I'm not going to get many. And obviously she's right, but I worry a little bit about that mindset, because that puts so much pressure on you when an opportunity does come that... How often do you see a player feel like they've got to do that bit more, hit that bit closer to the lines because of who's at the other end of the court? And I felt like in that moment Kasatkina was, you know, had it not been Świątek at the other end, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think that would have gone probably in. True, isn't it? The same happens when you play Nadal or Djokovic, these great retrievers who you've got to nail it, otherwise it's coming back. Assuming that Świątek plays well, Coco Gauff's unlikely to win, isn't she? Does she need to actually change something for Świątek? Does she need to say, okay, I've got to do something different than I've done all fortnight?
I think in a major final, you can tweak, but you can't change too much. Otherwise, it's just all too much. So I think Coco Gauff has to, well, one, we don't have to worry about her movement, right? She's going to cover court better than any other female in the game today. That's a huge advantage right now playing Świątek. Coco Gauff obviously has to have a huge day serving, under pressure, fight off the break points. But one thing that Coco Gauff will do a lot better than Kazakina, which is to pressure the serves of Świątek when they fall short. The second serves today, I mean, Kazakina still stayed 15 feet back, right? Coco Gauff's not going to allow that to happen. So, of course, Świątek is going to start this final as the favorite, but don't underestimate the teen in this final.
They played once before on clay, which was Rome last year, which was a tournament Świątek won. You know, she was playing really well, and she beat Gauff in two sets, but there was a tiebreak. You know, the first set was a tiebreak. I think I'm trying to think who the surface helps more. I think it is Iga Świątek's best surface, but I think it's Gauff's best surface, and the difference in Gauff's game is maybe bigger on clay. I think Gauff would actually want to play this match on a clay court, but.
Just a quick philosophical point on Iga Świątek, which actually raised itself a few days ago, but we've not had the chance to discuss it yet. I think it was after her quarterfinal victory, Iga Świątek was asked about to look ahead to her semifinals today against Kazakhina, and she was asked, I can't remember who the interviewer was now, she was asked, how do you prepare for these matches? You know, do you watch YouTube videos of your opponent? I think it was about the Zheng match, obviously a first meeting with Zheng. She was asked, how do you prepare, you know, particularly against a player you've never played before? And she said, I leave all of that to my coach. All of it. I don't do any of the research myself. You know, it's all on him. And she obviously has Daria Abramovic as well, her psychological coach, who's very involved. And look, it's obviously working for her. Whatever she's doing is working very well. But as a matter of principle, how do you feel about that, Pam?
Well, first off, I mean, I think Thomas... I'm not brave enough to say his last name.
Witkarovsky?
Witkarovsky, yeah.
Thank you.
I learned that from Martina.
Yeah, I know. And Martina Navratilova actually shared some things today on our tennis channel call. I was calling it with Caroline Wozniacki and Martina Navratilova. And Martina worked alongside Thomas during the period of time when Martina was trying to help Aga Radwanska take a step up. And Martina said she was incredibly impressed by Thomas as a coach. And Martina said, and Martina used to go through coaches more than any of us during that generation. She said, if he had been around when I was playing, I would have hired him. So that to me, given the fact that Navratilova never left a stone unturned. So I still say the team captain is the coach, and I think Thomas has done an amazing job with Iga.
Mm. She's a big believer in coaches, isn't she, Martina? I was very struck by her views during Madrid of the Emirati Kanu situation. I thought she might be open-minded or perhaps even positive about Emma Raducanu choosing to spend a bit of time without a coach and sort of talking about how she was, you know, keen on trying to figure things out for herself for a while on the tennis court. And Martina was not in favour of that at all. She said you just have to have a coach, particularly at this stage of your career. I found that really interesting.
Yeah, and I think actually for Coco Gauff, I feel like her coaching situation is, you know, cleared up a bit. And, you know, the mom and the dad can help to a certain extent, but I feel like Coco's been helped a lot by a real-time coach.
So it'll be Coco Gauff against Iga Świątek, the next chapter in the rivalry.
Yes,
Catherine. I'm calling it that.
Let's do it.
If it's got the name, it has to live up to it, right? The rivalry.
Build it and they will
against
come.
Coco Gauff. That'll be on Saturday. Before that, we have the men's semi-finals tomorrow, of course. Rafael Nadal, I think, must have asked for the for the opening slot, 3 p.m. on Philippe Chatrier to take on Alexander Zverev, because that is where he's playing. And then I think it's a not before 5:30 for Marin Cilic against Casper Ruud. What's going to happen?
Well, you have to read the newsletter, won't you? I think I'm not going to say how many sets, but I think Nadal's going to win. And I think I'm really on the fence on the other one. See, I'm biased. I want Cilic to win because I've got a foot in the Croatian camp, being married to one. But I don't know. I think this is
the man that was Casper Ruud's biggest fan about 4 months ago.
Probably,
dropped him like a hot potato.
And David, Casper Ruud is now doing aggro.
Yes.
Well, that's true. Okay, he's going to win.
Yes, I said we've got some follow-up on stories from yesterday. Obviously, the big one, folks, is Amélie Mauresmo. But since you brought it up, Matt, maybe we should just very quickly cover off the aggro follow-up from last night's Scandi Noir drama.
Which everyone was billing as a great moment for Scandinavia and Scandinavian tennis, and there was going to be some solidarity between the two countries. Not a bit of it, and I am so pleased about it.
I'm reading here from France24.com. The headline is, "Mother of all rows, as Runa Ruud trade grow up, no respect barbs." This is right in our aggro sweet spot,
oh,
Pam.
Yeah. It couldn't be any better.
This is
perfection.
So I learned the word aggro and to use it during my commentary this year
from you all.
So
yes.
And when I do use it, my commentary partner and everybody in the control room laughs like heck, and I'm like, but I don't give you guys credit at the time, but I am now.
Well, we just like to know, you know, and now we know.
Holger Rune was told to grow up by Casper Ruud, while the Norwegian was advised to show some respect after the two fought out a tense French Open quarterfinal in which the Danish teenager appeared to order his own mother to leave the stadium. World number 8 Ruud became the first Norwegian man to... Blah, 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 yeah, we know that. Rune took out his frustrations on the court, repeatedly grimacing and shouting at himself and the umpire as tensions mounted between the two players. At one point, Rune yelled, "Leave, leave, leave!" at the players' box, after which his mother, Annika, slipped out. Following the match, the 19-year-old Dane said Ruud was so unsportsmanlike during the match and talked to me over and over again. I didn't want to give him a hug after the match. He got a high five, and then I just had to get away from him, Rune told Danish Daily Extra Bladet, as images showed Ruud shaking his head at the net. Rune said Ruud then taunted him in the locker room after the match. He just went straight up to me and shouted, "Yes!" right in my face, Rune said. You can cheer on the court all you want and be happy. I do that myself when I win, but that's such bad style. Have some respect, he added. Ruud's father and coach Christian dismissed the locker room claim as a pure lie. Oh. And Ruud himself criticised Rune's behaviour on the court and said he needed to grow up. I don't know Holger personally, but I have seen on TV that sometimes there can be lots of drama. He's young and new, so that's excusable, but when you're on a big stage, it might be time to grow up a bit.
Delicious.
It's very hard to imagine Casper Ruud shouting in somebody's face in the locker room, and yet that might be why he did it, because he knew that if it came out, no one would believe it.
Yeah,
because
he can send his dad out to deny, and yeah, you know.
Oh, I think it's amazing. It is the aggro sweet spot, sort of, kind of.
It's all silly.
Kind of harmless and low level, but just adding. I mean. Let's be honest, we're all tuning in next time Rune plays Ruud, aren't we? Which is exactly what you want.
We love the silliness.
I've been in one men's locker room before in a major. It was the Australian Open back in the early 80s. I just wish I was in that locker room last night so I could confirm one way or the other.
I just love the thought of Casper Ruud getting in someone's face. I mean...
Yeah. Mm. See, Pam, when we were at the US Open, Pam does the sort of roving reports of it in the crowd. And I reckon you would have dug out the intel on all that if it was at the US Open.
Aggro reporter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right then, let's address the big story from yesterday, which has rumbled in to today, and of course we covered it in great detail. Amélie Mauresmo's comments in her press conference yesterday about women's tennis being less appealing than men's tennis, in her view, certainly in this era that we're in at the moment. It got covered extremely widely and extremely negatively. Amélie Mauresmo received a great amount of criticism. We believe that criticism was justified. We partook in it last night. I woke up this morning, we all woke up this morning to a lot of comments, most of them extremely positive. We were really overwhelmed by people that got in touch, so thank you ever so much if you were one of those people. What I also woke up to was an invitation from the Director of Communications at the FFT inviting me to come and speak to Amélie Mauresmo at 2 o'clock, shortly before the women's semi-finals were due to start. I wasn't quite sure what the setup was going to be, what the parameters of it were, and it turned out to be an on-the-record discussion. It was just me and one other journalist. Some members of the T7 were there, just sort of, you know, listening in. There had clearly been, you know, discussions off the back of what had happened yesterday. It caused an awful lot of ripples. And I recorded the discussion that I had with Amélie Mauresmo, and well, we're going to play it to you now.
I'm responsible for this, probably, for miscommunication. But it doesn't reflect the... Well, for those who know me, what I've been fighting for years, 20 years, whatever, 25 years, on the court, off the court, for women's tennis and everything. So, first of all, I'm sorry if the players, you know, they feel that these quotes and this declaration are... against them. It's not the case at all.
Could I ask the same question again then?
And you're talking about the night sessions.
Yes.
That was your...
And the message it sends about women's tennis.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about this after, because I want to explain maybe... The thing is, I should have explained a broader picture. Because when I see the sentence... what was it? That men's tennis... is more attractive or whatever the word I use than women's tennis. I mean that in these two tours, in these two women's tennis, men's tennis, you have eras, you have cycles, you have sometimes the men's tennis, like now is you have the three greatest champions on the men's tour of all time playing at the same time. So yes, the people are looking at these guys a little bit more right now. But before they came, it was actually the women's tour when I was, but most of all Serena, Venus, I mean, you know, if you've been following for years, the Belgians, everyone. Before that, you can say, yeah, maybe Sampras, Agassi was the rivalry that everyone was looking at. Before that, you could say maybe Steffi and Monica. So... My answer really, and I probably didn't explain it really well or say it really well, was to just say this is moving and obviously it's not always this way or this way, it's not always white or black. So I don't know if that makes more sense in a more broader picture. Does it make sense?
It does. It's something. It's not just it's something you hear a lot.
Yeah, but that was actually because when the sentence is written just like that, it's not what I feel and what I defend. It's just more of this
fact.
Well, that's how it is. That's how
but
it is.
Do you recognize the tournaments and your role in creating stars?
Yeah, so that's the second. In creating stars. Yeah. Well, I actually think, that's another thing because it's my first year, as you know. So it's also, and I'm probably here to try and change things and make things evolve, which I may be understanding just now because when you start something or when you start something like this, you have many things that you need to understand. Never being on this side of the thing, so it takes time definitely to understand how this big thing works and where we should go. And I knew before that the first edition that I would actually live, not only the 6 months preparation, but the first edition that I would actually live, would make me see what kind of vision I should have for the tournament, or we should have, because I'm not. Obviously, I'm there, but it's also the whole team together with me. So this is probably one example of where the tournament should go and maybe how things can evolve and everything. So on the responsibility of Roland Garros, I see that probably a little bit better now. We come from a history of scheduling also that I didn't measure before, but that is, you mentioned it, in the 18
out of 20.
We actually think more of three big courts, just so that you know, in the scheduling. It's not only two, we think as three big courts. So, but anyway, I hear your point still. So yeah, that's that on this part for me, that was the thing that I wanted to rectify, clarify, I don't know how you call it, and definitely not representative of what I feel inside after all, especially since you have Iga being on a run, absolutely incredible run, Coco, you know, rising again and again. So I feel that, you know, these kind of rivalries and everything could really come up now from the women's tour, at least I hope, definitely. So that's one thing. So the night session, there is one more aspect apart from everything that I just told you now, is that I inherit a one match with ticket holders that also have tickets just for one match. So for sure, one criteria also to choose was the length of the match, which is not probably fair, but sometimes it's also, I think we have to change that somehow, whether it's putting it earlier and put two matches, whether it's being able, having the possibility to add another match, another doubles, whatever. This would make my life, our life, much much easier. But that was it. That was what I came up, or they came up with, and that's what I had to deal with this year. And I also realized that it's difficult because of the length also. I'm not putting Amazon into this. It's more because it's not about TV that much. It's about also ticket holders in the stadium. And maybe we're wrong, but we have to see how we could work to actually have guaranteed kind of maybe, I don't know, 1.5-2 hours. Mm. I don't know what the exact time could be or should be, actually. I think we will continue. I'm pretty sure, actually, we will continue because overall there's more positive than the difficulties that we had, including the scheduling. So I think maybe we should look at times, starting times. We should look at how many matches. We should look at the all day on Châtrier, basically. Day, night. Yeah. I mean, the all matches on Châtrier, which, by the way, are always two men, two women. Anyway. So I think that's what we have to look at. The all day from beginning to end on Châtrier, which maybe it's 2 day matches, 2 night matches. Maybe starting it. I don't know. This is really something we're going to take time after the tournament to see what could work in terms of also Parisians. I mean, people coming here, what is the... Because we've seen a lot of things that are difficult also, the transports in the evening when it finishes too late. We haven't, you know, so... Well, we're trying to move forward, but some difficulties are also appearing that sometimes we have thought about it, but we cannot really fix them. Sometimes because to run all the subway here, it's very difficult to postpone the end of the subway, the time and everything. So, but, you know, we're here to try to fix the issues. And you know what? Maybe we will end up saying... Maybe the better solution was still to play one match, but then how are we going to do this and that? So it's not an easy one. It's not an easy one.
On the era thing, and the... And nobody would argue with the strength of the big
but
three.
But that was really my
big
point.
Three era.
But honestly, that's... But the way I said it wasn't...
I understand. And it's a point that is made a lot. It's not an uncommon point, but this time next year, it may very well only be Novak Djokovic of those big three. Are you suggesting that the schedule would then be adjusted to reflect that it would be more women's matches than men's? I mean,
we'll see the era. We are in 1 year. definitely.
It's very easy to use the era to.
Well, when you have
obscure the
only
big picture,
one, well, it's easy. Well, it's easy to not use the era when you have 2 matches to play at night. Also,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's the position that we are put in, and we have to respond now, not in 1 year. We have to respond now in this. I hear you, and I take the criticism on this. But that's how it is now. So in 1 year, maybe we won't have this discussion because maybe there's going to be 2 matches. Maybe not. So maybe we have another. We sit again and we say, okay, what evolves in 1 year? Well, maybe a little bit of this, maybe a little bit of that, but not yet the ideal situation. We are coming from... A bit behind in terms of all this, so but yeah, I hear that the miscommunication, and I'm not saying it's I take the responsibility for this, but it's not my deep how I feel. It's not how I feel. I think I should have taken the time to actually do this and explain the whole era thing and everything, but I just wanted to take a shortcut, which obviously didn't work.
Could I ask what your feelings are on women playing best of 5 sets? If the length of match is a reason that women are discriminated against, should that reason be taken away?
I don't think that's the main reason, but it's part of the equation. Because tomorrow, when women are, you know, when the era... The cycling are moving. Maybe we're not gonna have that anymore. I don't know.
Is it something you would consider, absolute?
For me, listen, I wouldn't consider it for the whole tournament. If you want to go, it doesn't help our night sessions. No, I think starting from day one. I don't see that happening, but I mean, I'm open to discussions for sure.
Well, look, I was really grateful to Emily Meresme for taking that time and being so almost disarmingly open. Quite frankly, she's not a politician, Emily Meresme. She's an open book, and while that has got her into a bit of trouble here, it's also, you know, a very likable quality in her. I like her. I find her very likeable. I want to like her. I want her to succeed in this job. I really do. Incidentally, Andy Murray has been asked about Amélie Mauresmo's comments at the tournament he's playing in Surbiton, and I think he's got a really nuanced appreciation of what Amélie said. He says, look, I know Amélie, it wouldn't have been her intention to undermine the women's game. I work with Amélie, I know her views on that stuff. People can sometimes say things that maybe they don't necessarily mean. She will want to be doing the best job she can for tennis and want to be supporting the women's game as well as the men's. But he also, Andy Murray, says, for me it would make sense that in the negotiations with TV and everything, it should just be so that the decision-making is out of people's hands. Because now somebody who's been a huge supporter of the women's game and done amazing things for women's sport is getting smashed, and I feel bad for her because I know that wouldn't have been her intention. He suggests that equality of scheduling should just be in the contract. You know, with the tournament, with the broadcaster, and Amélie is very clear there. It's about the ticket holders, not about the TV demands, certainly on the night session front. While I still take significant issue with that point of the era being the justification, I did leave at least feeling hopeful that she is, while I still think naive and underprepared perhaps for this role, she wants to hear perspectives and views, and she does want to do the best.
I'd rather have that than a politician.
Yeah, and look, the proof will be in the pudding next year and in years to come, quite frankly. But I at least feel like she's going to go away from this and she's going to really, really look at the situation.
Yeah, and I think she made it pretty clear. She would like to make some changes because I think her point about eras is that Novak Djokovic and Rafa Nadal would be at the top of the list if you want to look at sort of direct appeal based on everything they've done. But the problem is it's structurally put together with only one night match in the evening session, with a best of five set match or a best of three set match, that it just makes it impossible to properly look after the women's game. And that does put her in a very difficult position. I think there are still things that could have been done over the course of the last 2 weeks, but that's what needs to go away and change, I think.
Pam, you've seen a few eras.
Yeah, I have.
How do you feel about what you've heard today from Amélie Mauresmo? I know you spoke publicly, your reaction to her press conference yesterday, you were tremendously disappointed like the rest of us. How do you feel about this follow-up today?
Well, you can't train anybody in 24 hours. First off, in this era where former professional tennis players are given the role of tournament director, I haven't been for it from the beginning. When it was Tommy Haas, James Blake, Feliciano Lopez, I mean, for a while, I was like, why are all these guys getting the opportunity? And then actually, I was like, it's actually kind of Guy Forget. Like, what did he have on his resume when he preceded Amélie Mauresmo as a tournament director at a major? So I was like, okay, let's give Amélie a chance. I'm like, oh, let's give a woman a chance. And then, honestly, the other night when I was up until, like, 2 a.m. trying to wind down from the Nadal-Djokovic quarterfinal, it actually occurred to me, what is Amélie doing a press conference? I looked at my clock because I thought about whether or not I was going to post, show up, and you did. You did the hard yards, Catherine. I slept in. I didn't, but I'm like, she's going to be underslept, underprepared. This is going to be a mess. That's actually what I thought about before it happened. And then as it all unfolded, the only other time I've been equally as disappointed, honestly, was when I was president of the WTA in the early 90s, when our then number one player, Steffi Graf, said she was not for equal prize money. And I was given the assignment as to try and talk to her privately to say, if you feel that way, can you please not publicly state it, because for the following reasons? So, I don't know. It was just, for me, it was like disappointing but not surprising, given she's trained as a tennis player and as a coach, but I don't know what kind of training she had to be prepared for yesterday morning.
Mm. Are you hopeful for the future? I mean, maybe not overnight instant equality, but incremental change at the very least.
This is what I do know. Eras do change. Things do certainly tip. But I will never imagine in 100 billion years that there would ever be 10 night matches here and only one men's match, even if the scales tip 100% back at other eras when the women's game really was on, you know, was extraordinary. And I think now is extraordinary. I mean, for Iga Świątek not to have a match of the day, given what's going on, is crazy. And they could have, in the second week, they could have had the legends come out with Mansoor Bahram. They could have had an insurance match.
They're really into the legends here, aren't they?
They are.
They get massive crowds for that over on Longland. It's a draw.
So this 3 out of 5 set, we could only have the women we couldn't have women because we couldn't chance the short. They could have, in the second week of a major, there's all sorts of things going on. So I don't buy that. And I felt like it undercut one of the great performances in the women's game in the last 20 years, which is what Iga, for the night crowd not to have seen Iga Świątek, I say that is a shame.
I think it's also a shame. I am optimistic based on what I heard from Emily personally in that interview with Catherine and some conversations I've had today off the back of it from people within the game and people within the media. On the television side, I'm just optimistic that I think there is a realization. I think Emily Mauresmo would have got there to some degree without this in a year's time. But I think that this will actually help accelerate it and bring into focus in her mind that needs changing. There's some change needed here, and she's actually in a position where she can influence change. So I'm ultimately glad that we've had these conversations, because you don't get change without talking, do you? And so good luck to her, and I hope that and personally I'm absolutely prepared to give her the chance. Hope she can figure some things out. And next year, if there are some changes that look right, absolutely, I'm going to give her the credit for it.
And she's never shied away from a challenge.
No,
so I think she will step up.
Yeah.
David Law, an optimism shocker.
Well,
this is why we keep him around, Pam. He keeps me from being my grumpiest self. Pam, you're getting on a plane tomorrow and heading back stateside. So this is our last chance to ask you, who's going to win these titles?
Well, I mean, who couldn't go with Świątek before the tournament? Now she's in the final. But the fact that it's Coco Gauff, a teenager, within a year of what Emma did against Layla, don't count Coco out. Okay? So I'll still go with Świątek, but don't count Coco out. I didn't pick Rafa coming in based on what I saw from his foot, but how can you not say he's not destined to win 14? What I want to know, is he hinting towards, is this a drop mic? Is he going to say this is his last Roland Garros? I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
We think it might be.
He might see certain writings on the wall. He's got his doctor here. But, you know, I would like to see Rafa finish his Roland Garros career with number 14.
Rafael Nadal and his zombie foot. As Hannah calls him on our Twitter. Goodness knows what that doctor is putting in that foot to get him around the court. But my goodness me, it is it's working a treat. Pam, thank you ever so much for being on the podcast and for being a friend of the show and a supporter. It really means a lot to us. Matt loves dropping your name.
I heard it yesterday. It made my day. And I am disappointed whenever I check my podcast and I don't have a fresh tennis podcast ready to listen to.
I played tennis this morning and was, you know, kind of knew that we might get to speak to Pam Shriver this evening. We came over here, I was thinking maybe she'd be giving me some advice. She's been dragging my game, let me tell you that. She called me a pigeon. It's all accurate.
Yeah, Matt is now Simon Briggs' pigeon, ladies and gentlemen.
You didn't play Simon today, did you? No.
Yeah, we played. I mean, we didn't play a match, but we hit, and then we played points, and it all fell apart, Pam. I need help.
It's a whole nother podcast.
He needs a forehand, Pam. Right then, Pam, we're going to let you enjoy your last night in Paris. Maybe the Eiffel Tower beckons for you one more time. We've still got three more days to come. Men's semis tomorrow, women's final Saturday, men's final Sunday, daily pods throughout. What could be better? We're here because of Friends of the Tennis Podcast. Thanks ever so much to all friends of the pod. If you want to become a friend, if you want to get yourself a shout out or an intro, the link is in our show notes, as always, as is the link to become a subscriber to the newsletter. If you're not getting Matt's stat,
what are you doing with your
life? I don't know what kind of life you're living, but it must be a sad one. So sort it out, folks. Our tournament mascot is Cooper the cat. Hello, Cooper. We love you.
We do.
My mascot is Carter.
Right, Carter.
And I scored points for Carter today with Coco Gauff in turn because Matt copies all of my predictions. He and the dearly departed Gerald have also scored points today.
I'm being dragged by everyone today.
Me and Darwin decided we'd go all in on a Świątek in three sets job. Sorry, Darwin.
And, well, I think we need a bit more context for this. David realised that he had the same prediction as Catherine and me.
So I was right.
So David said, I'm going to change. And I said, yeah, you can change to something that's wrong all you like.
Mm. And I did.
And he did.
And he did.
And he did. That's David Law, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Ilana Kloss and Billie Jean King, who walked out onto Philippe Chatrier today to be honoured by the tournament on the 50th anniversary of her victory here in 1972, her one and only French Open. In her own words, she just wanted to win it and get it out of the way, completing the career Grand Slam. So it was a lovely, lovely moment. Matt leaned over to me and he said, oh, she's got green glasses to match the green jacket. It's perfection. It was a lovely moment.
It was nice that Iga Świątek stayed on court and
it really was.
Got a photo together afterwards.
It was all the loveliness, those photos. Thank you to Billie Jean King and Ilana for sponsoring Billie Jean, who's currently romping around her grandparents' garden, having a lovely old time. Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner are our executive producers and all-around top blokes. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We do, yes. We have Luminita Vasilica.
Oh, I know who Luminita Vasilica is. Luminita's always getting in touch with us and is absolutely lovely.
That's a wonderful name.
It's the greatest.
Is she in Cirque du Soleil or something? I feel like she ought to be. Pam is demonstrating some Cirque du Soleil-esque moves.
Amazing.
Next to me here. Oh my goodness me.
That's too much flexibility for my leg. I can't do that.
Thank you ever so much, Luminita, for your wonderful name, for your support and for inducing Pam into extraordinary moves here.
We also have Sigal Shaharabani, and she is in Israel.
Like Steven Sigal?
Come on, this one's better. Sigal's way better.
Well, give me another Sigal reference.
I haven't got one. But Israel. Ooh.
We've had a few from Israel recently, haven't we?
So exciting.
My favourite trip post-retirement, 1997, to Israel for 15 days. It was amazing.
Oh,
wow.
Can we come?
And last one is Alison Lemaire, who used to live in the UK, but is now in New York.
Must have some sort of French connection with a surname like that.
Yeah.
And we already know the tennis Alisons, don't we? Because this has come up recently.
We can't get it wrong again.
We've got a Risk and we've got a Van Uytvanck. And
yes, we have.
I've covered us off from receiving lots and lots of emails entitled Alison Risk, 7! So thank you, Alison Lemaire, for your support and for being a friend of the Tennis Podcast. As I say, if you want to become a friend, the link is in our show notes. And Friends of the Tennis Podcast will have a Roland Garros review show, which will be published the day after the tournament ends. We'll try and digest it all, make sense of it all, relive it all a mere 24 hours later. And of course, the tennis keeps coming thick and fast at this time of year. 2 weeks away is Wimbledon now, and we will have Wimbledon relive. 3 weeks away. Tell me it's 3 weeks.
Yeah,
3 weeks.
It used to be 2 weeks. Goodness me. 3 weeks away is Wimbledon, and we'll, of course, have Wimbledon relived, two episodes thereof in the lead-up to the championships. So join us for all of that, and join us tomorrow for our there's not a word for third from I was going to say penultimate
plus one
or pre-penultimate.
I think it's anti-penultimate.
Of course he knows. Join us for that on Friday. We'll speak to you then. It's not, is it?
Yeah, I think it is. I hope it is, otherwise I'd sound like a right idiot.
We'll drag you on your phone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.